You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck Podcast, dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I am Tim Capper. Hey, and Cliffy D. Hey, hey, what's up?
Hey now.
The draft. Interesting. There's more news to talk about, obviously, as, it, you know, two weeks in a row, I guess it's good to have some breaking news of some sort. I guess.
Off-season? What off-season? I keep saying this, but what off-season? Like, there seems to be news all the time. There's always stuff to talk about when it comes to the Canadian Football League and the Montreal Alouettes. And quite frankly, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. Different type of draft this year as far as how it was produced. And we're going to talk about the draft. And also to help us talk about the draft also is a current Alouettes player who has quite an interesting tie within the CFL draft, and he will bring that up. But we'll be also chatting with DJ LaLama very shortly. But the draft itself on TSN, I know you mentioned you're talking about last week or last podcast prior to the AC episode that I think you were worried about how it was going to come off when it came to the transition, et cetera, et cetera. From TV to the internet. What was your thought on, I mean, did it live up to your expectations? Were you disappointed? How did it come off to you? The draft guru, the draft nutcase that you are.
I would be okay with guru, to be quite honest, okay. But I mean, the guru would imply
guru nutcase.
I guess, fine, I'll go with that. Well, as far as the transition goes from TSN to the CFL website for the draft, I mean, it was interesting in the sense that I'm still not entirely convinced that's how they wanted to present it, but it was just the way that the circumstances presented itself, that they had to present the remainder of the draft in the way that they did. Essentially, what had happened was instead of having the panel of Farhan Lalji, David Sanchez, Dave Naylor, and Dwayne Ford – on the TSN side, you go to CFL.ca and then you see former guest of the Alouettes Flight Deck, Marshall Ferguson, along with Brody Lawson, talking about the remaining draft picks. And as far as the presentation goes, I mean, it was what you'd sort of expect it to be as far as it had a kind of a podcast feel to it. Like, you got a couple of people, you know, sitting at home talking about the draft. And the only difference is they're also announcing picks as they come in. Yeah. And once again, I did find that the draft picks were kind of flying in fast and furious, and I guess that's just the nature of the CFL draft as it is. And unfortunately, and again, this is no fault of Marshall or Brody. It's just the fact that they're busy talking about a certain player as soon as they announce that they've been drafted, and then boom, there's like three or four other guys that have been drafted as well, and then you start talking about the second player on that list, and three, four more gets drafted. So it's you're constantly playing catch up, and I think that's I don't know if that's just a matter of just how the system is and how do you react to it, because you want to talk about some of these players, especially if it's a player that you're highly coveted or should have been drafted a lot higher according to a lot of the draft experts, and they end up falling down to like the later rounds. So you want to give them these players as much attention and notoriety as possible, but at the same time, you got all these draft picks coming in, and everybody just wants to see, okay, who did my team draft? Who's taken in the fifth round? Who's taken in the sixth round? And I found myself, like, I was following along on the CFL tracker as far as the draft picks come. So while you're talking about the guy who was drafted first in the third round, I'm now almost ready for the fourth round. Like, it again, no fault of the hosts for the CFL stream, if you will, but it kind of made it a little difficult to, like, it just constantly felt like they're playing catch up. And again, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way of doing it, but as far as the transition from TSN to CFL.ca goes, I'd say overall it went fairly smooth, a lot smoother than what it had been in years previous compared to TSN going from the actual broadcast on TSN 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it is, to TSN.ca. Like, that was a very clunky transition from one to the other. Whereas right. this time around, maybe it had to do with the fact that pretty much everybody's broadcasting from home nowadays. It felt a little bit smoother as far as the actual transition goes, but you still had the hiccups. And like I said, you still had those certain areas where, you know, there's always room for improvement. Let's put it that way. And I found like, listen, as long as I'm getting the information I need, and you do get eventually the thoughts on the players that you're looking for. And I'd say overall, they did the best they could considering the circumstances. That's how I'll leave it as is. It's probably not how they wanted the draft to go as far as the presentation, but they made the best of it considering the circumstances. So I was going to say I'll give them a mulligan for this, but they didn't really screw up anything. It's just a matter of it didn't quite come across. Again, especially compared to even the NFL draft a couple of weeks ago, it's night and day. It really is. And it's just a matter of just how much you're willing to invest in that particular product, so to speak. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the CFL website, they did, I think, as best a job as they could. So I'll give them props for that. And again, it's all about the learning experience. Like, how can we grow from this? And then the 2021 draft, hopefully won't be all done from home as well. Hopefully that'll be too done in the studio and will be given the chance to shine like it should. So I'm really curious to see how things go moving forward. And at the end of the day, at least now we get to know who's now going to be playing for the Montreal Alouettes. And to me, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Now, when they switched away from the first two rounds, did the teams have less time to make their picks? Could that have been part of the issue? Because I don't know what the actual rules were. Obviously, for the NFL, it stays the same throughout the thing as it was through those two days. But did it change for the CFL draft? I don't know.
It's hard to say because we're not really given a whole lot of insight as far as, like, even though you say such and such a team is on the clock and typically you're given 2-3 minutes to make your choice. Like I said, while you're sitting there talking about certain draft picks, and then, like I said, it just felt like draft picks kept coming in like relatively quickly. So maybe in the interest of speeding things along, this is how the CFL has decided this is how you're going to get it done, because you don't have that same viewership that you have for the NFL draft, for example.
Right. No, I know.
And you're also got less players to draft as well. So you don't necessarily have to stretch it out over 3 days, for example. Like, you can get it all done in one night. But to me, maybe people behind the scenes of the CFL would be able to explain it a lot better as far as the draft process goes and the time that each team is allowed to make their picks. But that's the impression I got from it was, it's basically announce the pick or make your pick. You're on the clock, make your pick, send it in, boom, on to the next. And just that's how they do it.
I thought it came off okay. It seems that all TV networks have been able to adapt in doing this. And I think they did a good job. And considering that they actually did start the stream at the post second round stream early, I thought it was interesting that, you know, that Brody was also talking about the territorial picks. So, because they did run long, to be fair, they did run longer than their window was allowed for the CFL draft, but the first two rounds. But still, overall, I thought it was done very well. As I said before, I'm not really a draft guy, but I did watch it, and I know the numbers were actually just phenomenal when it came to viewership. I think one of the questions that I do have, though, Cliff, for you, and I'm sure it's a question that everybody has been asking. How is it possible that the commissioner can make his statement about the league itself, but yet not be available to announce the picks?
Yeah, that to me was just that made absolutely no sense. It reminded me of, I want to say, 2014, when Mark Cohan, when he was the commissioner of the CFL, he basically announced the first overall pick and then buggered off for the rest of the night.
Love it.
He just disappeared. Like, okay. Like, I know you don't want to sit and maybe to announce every single player in the CFL draft. Not that there's so many of them, but you figured he'd at least do the first round. But I was very, very, very surprised to not see Randy Ambrosi in some way, shape, or form at least do the first round, if nothing else.
I know. Mean, I don't understand.
What else did you have to do?
Yeah.
You're making TikTok videos now in your quarantine?
No, I think I know what it was. Considering that the technology, he wasn't able to stream properly from his house because, you know, we're not actually not showing it to the fans. We're actually showing it to everybody live. So I'm sure there was some sort of technology issues that he wasn't able to, that they weren't able to overcome. Sarcasm. At its best.
Hashtag sarcasm.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know what? Out of everything, that made it look bush.
It really did. And that's the thing is, like, this is your baby. This is your opportunity to help get fans excited about Canadian football. And let's face it, the CFL takes so many lumps on a daily basis from so many haters and so many critics and what have you. Like, to not have the commissioner announce at least the first round, if nothing else. I mean, quite frankly, it should have been the entire TSN broadcast because, once again, what else is there?
Yeah,
there's no other sports going on.
I know.
It's not like you had pressing engagement elsewhere.
If the NFL commissioner could do it, hello.
Exactly. Roger Goodell's in his friggin' basement, and he's making announcements. Like, he did the first two rounds, and then, okay, fine. For the remainder of the draft, he handed off to whomever. Fine. Okay. Like, I get it. Maybe you don't want to do every single round, but holy crap, for the commissioner of the Canadian Football League to not announce one single draft pick?
No.
Like that is, to me, that's poor form, quite frankly. Like, that's insulting.
We should actually reach out to Farhan and see if he can give us some deets.
Perhaps. I mean, there better be one heck of a good reason as far as I'm concerned, because, like I said, it cheapens it, quite frankly. You said, it makes it look Bush League, and that's sad.
The only good thing about Randy Ambrosi being at the beginning of the draft was that sweet photo behind him. That was sweet. I don't know if you noticed it. It was early time Grey Cup with an old school leather helmet next to it, next to a current helmet in a green field. I wonder if that, you know what? I wonder if that was the field that was in Toronto where the first ever CFL, first ever game took place. Many years ago. I don't know.
100 plus years ago?
Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was just Bush. But I mean, overall, I thought it was good. And I know we're going to talk about our draft picks here in a little bit, but let's, I know you have the list in front of you, Cliff. Let's, for those who need to have a little bit of a recap, let's go over the Alouettes picks.
All right. Well, we'll start right at the top. The Alouettes didn't have a first-round draft pick because of the trade for you-know-who, so we'll just skip the first round entirely.
It's okay. He skipped the first game he ever played anyways.
Touché. All right. Well, the first pick in the second round that the Montreal Alouettes enlisted the aid of is Marc-Antoine Decoy, a defensive back from the Université de Montréal. This, to me, was not a surprising pick whatsoever, mostly because, A, we all know, I mean, like, unless you've been living under a rock the past, basically all of 2020, Danny Machocha, former head coach of the Caribbean, now the general manager of the Montreal Alouettes, it was pretty obvious that he was going to be taking former Caribbean players in the CFL draft, the first chance he got. And sure enough.
Oh, you're kidding me, right?
I know, right? This episode is just tinged with sarcasm, isn't it?
It is.
But yes, regardless of all the mitigating factors surrounding it, I mean, this is definitely a great pick. Marc-Antoine is definitely one hell of a football player. He's going to be an impact player no matter where he is. And again, after the NFL draft was done, they have the period of undrafted free agent signings where a few Canadian players ended up going south of the border, including Marc-Antoine, who signed a UDFA, as it's called, with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
So he may not be in Alouettes colors just yet. A lot will depend on the Packers and how they view him as a player and how they view him in training camp. So the odds of seeing Marc-Antoine in Alouettes colors in 2020 are slim, I should say. But again, until training camp gets underway and until we actually have a training camp to talk about, then it's all a moot point. But if he does end up coming to play for the Alouettes, they are getting a stud. There's no question about that. Yeah. I mean, the guy has championship experience. He was in the Vanier Cup just a few months ago. Definitely plays extremely well. Fast as hell. I mean, the guy has a 40 time of 4:35 during his pro day. I mean, unbelievable. Guy reads the ball well. He's got a great football mind. I mean, this is the kind of draft pick that I think if he wasn't signed by the Packers, I think a lot of the teams in the first that had first round picks would have been falling all over this guy. But lo and behold, I think a lot of people got scared off at the fact that maybe he won't be coming north of the border for at least a little while. So I think that's what allowed things, you know, allowed him to fall down a little bit. And sure enough, Machocha sees that this guy is still available in the second round. Boom. He's going to grab him. And sure enough, he got his man.
Yep. And next?
Next, there was another second round pick for the Alouettes, and that would be Cameron Lawson, a defensive lineman from Queens. Now, it's funny, like when I did my draft preview, he was one of the guys that I had on my short list of players to really pay attention to. And he didn't make the cut for my blog simply because I really thought someone was going to take him in the first round. Like, he has that kind of talent. So once again, it's amazing how the CFL draft works, is that players that you think are going to be automatic first rounders, sometimes they fall for whatever reasons. And sure enough, for Montreal to be able to get, they need all the help they can get as far as defensive line goes. They've made a lot of moves in free agency to bolster that line. And obviously the draft, as far as draft needs go, defensive line was definitely up there with the Montreal Alouettes. And they are getting a stud with Cameron Lawson. Like, this guy is, he's strong. Like, he's just a powerful guy. Loves to punish people. Just watching his film, like, this guy is a bruiser. And I can definitely see him being a real force, especially on special teams. Like, I definitely see him throwing his weight around. And he just manages to track the ball as well, which is, that's what you want from your defensive tackles, is someone that can bull rush and get to the quarterback and just throw him to the ground or just make plays happen. And given them the right in the right environment, I can definitely see Lawson doing that here in Montreal. And I definitely see him being someone to keep an eye on over the next couple of years.
We're the Alouettes, you know, we're lucky to have two picks. I mean, it was nice to be able to have a pick from a trade that we got. So what was this? Was this for the I'm trying to remember which trade. Anyways, it doesn't matter. We got the pick. It was nice to have actually have two picks to kind of make up for the to make up for what happened in the first round. In round three, Cliff.
All right. In the third round, the Alouettes selected Carter O'Donnell, an offensive lineman from the University of Alberta. And this is another case of a undrafted free agent in the NFL because he signed a deal with the Indianapolis Colts. So once again, this is a player we won't see necessarily right away, potentially. However, Montreal, as you know, is they've got some good studs on the offensive line. Some good young guys that are just about ready to take that step to the next level. So I actually felt, okay, we're in a good place as far as offensive line goes. So I think we can afford to play with house money a little bit. And the fact that this guy managed to fall all the way down to the third round is just a coup as far as I'm concerned. He plays the game with grit. He's just a workhorse. That's what I like about him, is that he's just physically gifted. He's a specimen. And if he can come to Montreal, even if you have to wait a couple of years, that's fine. Like, just let him, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Just let him marinate in the oven, so to speak. Just, you know, let him get ready. Let him get his football senses about him. If that means he's got to spend a little bit of time in the NFL for a bit, that's fine. Like, you think back to Philip Blake when we drafted him in the 2011 draft. I think he was a fourth rounder for Montreal. And he didn't come to the Alouettes until, I want to say, 2016. So about 5 years, I think, he was in the NFL, or just before he came up to the CFL. And still, he was still a young man. He was still playing at a very high level. He put in some really solid years here in Montreal. If Carter O'Donnell can have just half that success, then this pick is, my God, this is one of those picks that is going to really pay dividends in the long run.
And just like the previous round, it was, you know, nice to get two picks also, eh, in that third round?
Yep, and I think the third round pick, if I'm not mistaken, came from the Saskatchewan Roughriders as part of the, coincidentally enough, the trade that saw Philip Blake and Patrick Lavoie go over to the Rough Riders. And with this second pick in the third round, the Alouettes once again go back to the Université de Montréal, and they select Benoit Marion, who also plays on the defensive line. Now, this guy, whew, this is a specimen for sure.
Yeah.
Man, like, watching again, you if you haven't seen his highlight tapes, definitely go to the Alternative and check it out. This guy's a beast. Like he gets to the ball and he makes opponents pay, whether it's the quarterback, whether it's the offensive line, and just the way that he can just come off the edge. My God. I mean, this is one of those guys, and I think he's still in his early 20s. Like, he's only going to get better with time. Like, that's what I love is that these are the kind of players that you get them early enough, you put them in the right environment, get them working with the right coaches, and working with defensive line coach Todd Howard here in Montreal. I think he's going to push guys. I think Marion's going to push guys like Bo Banner, Nate Anderson, Michael Cinelli, other Canadian draft picks that were taken to help make this defensive line something special. And Marion, if he gets the chance, I definitely think he's going to make a lot of noise for the Alouettes.
Yep. Now, obviously, if you wanted to see Cliff's rundown of everybody that the Alouettes picked up in the draft, you can do so by heading over to the Alternative podcast. Alternative's blog at alternative.com. Cliff, out of the rest of them that are listed there, and I know we had so many other players, I'll pick two that you think that stood out to you specifically. Can you do that?
Absolutely. That would be the next one. It would be in the fourth round. Brian Herlimana. God, I'm sure I'm screwing up his name. Herlimana, also from the University of Montreal.
What?
Linebacker. I know, right? Believe it or not, folks, Danny Machocha did draft other players from other universities.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, again, of the 10 draft picks that the Alouettes had, 5 of them did come from the province of Quebec. Not
what?
All from the...
oh, wait, you're right. One came from Concordia.
Two came from Concordia.
Two, yeah. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah, but again, Brian is just an absolute monster. My God, I'm really excited to see what he does playing alongside Henoch Mwamba, Jean-Gabriel Poulin, DJ Lalama. I mean, like, you talk about this linebacker core. Like, it's slowly becoming extremely Canadian and with true ballers. I even see Brian being able to play with Taylor Loeffler, like, just sort of line up in the middle almost as, like, a rotating in with Mwamba. Like, this kid is a bona fide stud. The way he tracks the ball and aggressive too. Like, even watching him come off the edge and just get to the quarterback or just throw his hands out there to bat balls away or even make the interception. I mean, like, this kid is a playmaker. I am of the players that have been drafted, like, that this is one that I think can really make an impact almost immediately for the Alouettes if given the chance. I mean, there's just so much upside to him. I definitely see him being a real force. And the fact that he's perfectly bilingual as well is just going to make marketing a player like this so much easier. I mean, that's one thing. Like, the Alouettes definitely want to make this Quebec's football team. And in order to do so, you've got to have Quebecers on there, which the Alouettes have always had Quebec-born players. But to have players of this caliber that are bilingual and pretty much have future superstar written all over them.
Yeah.
Like what oh God, he's going to kill me.
We'll get the pronunciation sooner or later.
Yeah, we'll have him on. He'll educate us as to how to say his name properly. And I'm so sorry that I keep screwing it up.
Wait a minute, but you want? Oh no, wait. I'm curious to know. Did Brody talk about him when he was picked, and did she get it right or?
I think she said his name once, and okay. So she nailed it the one time that she actually said his name properly. So
okay.
So props to her for that, but. Yeah. And the other player that I think is going to be a real fun project in the coming years is the last pick that the Alouettes made, Colton Klassen, a running back from Saskatchewan, University of Saskatchewan, I should say. This kid, all of his measurables are off the charts. I mean, he's fast. He's built like a fire hydrant. The guy is just this is a real project. This is going to be a lot of fun to watch because not only can he's primarily a running back, but he can be a receiver. He can do kick returns, special teams. He's going to be all over that. I definitely see this guy is an athletic beast. And let's not forget his head coach at the University of Saskatchewan is former Montreal Alouette legend, Scott Flory.
Oh yes.
And he's been able to help produce a couple of really solid football players in his time there. And he's actually said, like, this guy is definitely someone that you've got to keep an eye on. And once again, like, I saw his film before the draft and once again was very close to adding him to the draft preview. But Klassen, he's in a Klassen all by himself. This guy is, he's going to be fun to watch for sure. Like, this is one of those pet projects that Yelowitz can have. Again, give him the chance. Just let him sit on the practice roster. Let him learn from guys like James Wilder and Tyrell Sutton. Or when you go out to special teams, let him learn from guys like that, like Henoch Mwamba, Taylor Loeffler, DJ LaLama. As far as I'm concerned, the sky is the limit for this guy. I definitely think he could be a real player for years to come. And we haven't even begun to see what this guy can do yet. I mean, he's the very definition of a diamond in the rough, like someone that just needs a little bit of seasoning, a little bit of chance to develop and learn from the pros. And I think if you're willing to invest a little bit of time and effort into making this guy something special, I don't think the Alouettes are going to be, this is not going to be a wasted draft pick by any stretch of the imagination.
We wanted to get to talk a little bit more about the draft itself and also get up close to one of our own here on the Alouettes roster. As I mentioned before, we were able to speak with one of the players who, again, has an interesting tie with the draft itself, and we will find out just that. So we'll get to the interview now, and we'll be right back. And to join us on the line to talk about the draft and his career that he's had so far in the CFL, it is a guy who's making a name for himself in Montreal and in the CFL. It is DJ LaLama. Hey, DJ, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on.
It's funny. We had the draft, and we were just talking about some stuff prior to that about the draft itself. But, you were taken out of Manitoba. You were drafted by the Eskimos back in 2016. I think one of the cooler things that we should talk about, considering how you tie in very well to a former Alouette and considering where you come in your career, is that, you know, there's a whole big thing usually made in the U.S. draft. As an example, the guy who is usually considered the last pick in the draft is considered Mr. Irrelevant. And usually these guys can make a huge name for themselves. You yourself, also in the Canadian draft, would be considered Mr. Irrelevant at that time from when you were chosen.
Right.
But you also happen to have a tie into the Alouettes. But first, obviously getting drafted is all you wanted to do, I'm sure, as a player, just to further your career. Did it really matter where you were chosen?
Yeah, that's a good question. To be completely honest, I mean, you always have high expectations for yourself. Going in, you know, the discussions I had had with teams, personnel men, my agent, you know, I thought I was definitely going to go a lot higher. I thought that I had proven that, you know, at the combine with a good showing. But ultimately, you know, like any football player, you can't control the uncontrollable. All you can do is kind of rest on the film that you put out over 4 years in your college, you know, career, and hope that, you know, that's enough. So speaking to your point, yeah, all you want is an opportunity. You know, where you get drafted, what round, doesn't necessarily matter, as long as you can get your foot in the door, and then the rest of it is up to you anyway.
Yeah. Now,
so I think, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry, man.
No, and you know, for me, it was, you're sitting there with family, right? And obviously you want to go a lot higher. And you know, I remember Dwayne Ford actually on the telecast, you know, and this year's Mr. Irrelevant, you know, and he shouldn't be, but you know, U of M linebacker DJ LaLama. And it was just one of those things where it was almost, yeah, kind of surreal in a sense, cause you heard your name and you probably thought at that point I wasn't going to hear my name just because there's one pick left.
Right.
But then really quickly, you know, kind of this like calmness came over me in one respect, because it's the defending Grey Cup champions. They have the last pick. They see something in you. Like, this is a great organization and team to be a part of. And then on the other hand, it's all right, like, let's buckle up. Like, I thought I worked hard before. Like, I thought I had something to prove before. And now this has only amplified that tenfold, because again, you know, in my mind, 69 guys weren't better than me or whatever the number was. And now I have something to prove, you know, not to prove people wrong, but just to prove myself right. And that's kind of how I've approached every year, you know, moving forward since.
Do you find that, I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, you're Western originally, then you went and you mm-hmm. redshirted, then you went to Manitoba, and then you didn't play in 2012. In your mm-hmm. opinion, do you think if you had stayed at Western for whatever reason and played, you may have gone higher? I mean, obviously, no matter where you currently are in your career, but did you ever think about that? Or it's just, you were happy just to have been drafted?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, you definitely, you know, can kind of sit back and think back at certain times, you know, over the course of your career and make sure that your decisions were, you know, obviously best for you, and kind of hindsight's 2020 that way. But to be honest, just with the family situation I had going on with school, you know, in the direction I wanted to go that way, you know, it made the most sense for me as a person, right, beyond a football player, to come home. You know, Western was a great program. You know, I was roommates with Tyler Varga. Obviously, you know what he did in his football career. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a fantastic culture there. You know, definitely, you know, Byron Archambault, actually, funny enough, another Alouette tie. You know, we spent most of that summer in 2011 training together, as he was actually committed to Western as well before going back to University of Montreal. You know, Mickey Donovan was the defensive coordinator at the time before he left the program. So there's a lot of connections and a lot of quality people, but ultimately I think in life you have to do what's best for you at the given time.
Yeah.
And are there going to be some ramifications, positive, negative? Yeah, of course. But, you know, I don't look back on it and say, oh, well, if I wore purple for a couple more years, I would have been drafted higher. You know, I was really fortunate to have a great coaching staff team around me at U of M. I think I made the most of that opportunity. You know, and ultimately, like I said, I got my one foot in the door, and, you know, luckily I've got two in there now for the last couple of years. So, you know, everything's worked out the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think Cliff, you're going to bring up something we talked about it before, but I think Cliff, you're going to mention about his particular tie, with being Mr. Irrelevant, right?
Absolutely. For those of you some of you may know this, but for some of you that don't know about this, in 2008, Luc Brodeur-Jourdain was the Mr. Irrelevant of the CFL draft. And now, look, you've seen the career that he's had in the Canadian Football League, and now as a member of the coaching staff here in Montreal, fair to say that just because you're the quote-unquote Mr. Irrelevant doesn't mean that you're any less of a player. If anything, it's all about making the opportunity count when you get the opportunity. Would you agree with that, DJ?
No, without question. You know, it's funny you say that, and that's a kind of a cool tie, actually. You know, LBJ was one of the first guys I met, you know, once I got out to Montreal. And just, you know, seeing what kind of person he was and the type of character he had, you definitely gravitate towards him as a veteran and a leader on the team when I first got there in 2017. You know, and just, again, as you're around him, you know, he has a different aura about him, right? Like, people want to be in his presence, you know, hence why guys play so hard for him now as a coach. Just a fantastic individual. But, you know, I haven't had this conversation with him, but I'm sure, you know, going last in the draft, yeah, you're excited to have an opportunity, but I'm sure, you know, that only served as motivation for him over the course of his, you know, 12-year career. You know, it's, should he have been picked higher? Well, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe he would have felt the same way that I did. But ultimately he had his opportunity. He put his nose down, you know, worked as hard as he could. And I mean, shoot, he's an Alouettes legend and a guy that I'm really fortunate to call a friend and a coach now.
There you go. I mean, that should say it all. Like, I mean, just because you're the last player chosen in the draft doesn't mean anything as far as your talent level goes or anything like that. At the end of the day, it's all about getting that opportunity and making the most of it when your number is called.
Now, DJ, 100%.
Talk to us about coming over to Montreal, because after you left the Eskimos, you signed with Montreal as a free agent, started here. What were your impressions about Montreal when you first came in? Because, again, in 2017, when you joined the team, things were not great. But, again, you're given an opportunity and you're expected to make the most of it. What were your impressions of Montreal when you first arrived here?
Yeah, you know what? Obviously, like, I've been to Montreal a couple times in the past for football-related events. You know, obviously played out there at SEPSM in 2014 with the University of Manitoba. So had seen the football scene there a little bit, and you grow up kind of watching the old battles of Montreal and Edmonton, and you see it on TV, you know, what Molson Stadium can look like, you know, when things are good. You get out there, and like I said, I think you take everything in stride, right? It's an opportunity, and you want to make the most of it. So you're not really trying to hang your hat on one, two, or you know, too many things. You know, you're just trying to take day by day. But a great group of people. You know, obviously the product that we could put on the field wasn't optimal. You know, we weren't happy with it ourselves, but just sometimes you have those years in sports, and unfortunately it was our turn. But just, it was a solid group of people. You know, the way that John Bowman, for example, welcomed me in, he didn't know me from a hole in the wall at first, ended up getting me in his building, and him and I, you know, grew pretty close together over the course of that year. You know, BJ Cunningham lived around the corner, Tyquan Underwood, Ernest Jackson. Like, we all lived in this little area in Griffintown, and Tyquan Underwood used to call it the Griffintown Express. So we'd hop all in a couple cars after practice, and we all rolled back to Griffintown. And, you know, it was just, even though we weren't producing on the field, the one thing that I will give everyone credit for was, you know, they still made it semi-enjoyable to come to work, you know, and you still were able to form those relationships off the field, which, you know, in football, producing accolades, that's all great, but it's the relationships that you can take away that ultimately make the difference, I think, in anybody's career. And in that season, you know, through some hardships, I think only grew some of us closer together. And now I think 2 years later, you're seeing the benefit. You know, Vernon Adams was in that locker room when I first got there. And we've seen kind of the bottom of the barrel. And now everything that we do and the reason why we work so hard and the reason why we're also excited to get back to Montreal this year is because we've kind of turned that thing around. There's a little bit of a different culture in there now. You know, we're a little younger, a little hungrier. We still have that great veteran leadership, but, you know, I think you have to experience defeat in order to have success. And we did that. You know, it wasn't great. Obviously, you guys as fans probably didn't enjoy, you know, every game that you guys saw in 2017, but I think it's part of the process. And obviously, we had a lot of fun last year, and we'll build on that, you know, whenever we can get back out there this year.
How frustrating was it for you in 2018 just to lose an entire season to injury? It's, you know, a lot of fans may not know what it may be like for a player, you know, somebody who works so hard during the offseason to stay in shape and to be ready for, you know, for when training camp comes. How frustrating was it for you to just to lose that entire season in 2018?
Yeah, that was one of the toughest things I've had to endure in my career. You know, not only kind of professionally as an athlete, but just, you know, emotionally, mentally, obviously physically. But I don't know if a lot of people know the story. Like I almost died, and that's the honest truth. It went from a shoulder surgery, you know, get reconstruction, and you think you're on the way back to, you know, to health. And 8 days after my surgery, I actually had a blood clot in my right lung that basically almost took my life. Without, you know, some great surgical advice and having a surgeon here in the city in Winnipeg that I trust dearly, Dr. McDonald, you know, he essentially found it and saved my life. And it definitely puts a different perspective on it. So I'd say for like those first 8 days after surgery, initially, you're kind of sitting there, you're watching the guys play on TV. You know, it hurts not to be out there. You want to be out there contributing with your team and, you know, playing the game that you love and what you've sacrificed so much in your life for. But again, once I had that blood clot, you know, it really switches your perspective, lets you see things through a different lens. And now, like the way that I've told everybody, this is all now just kind of the cherry on top. This is all gravy for me. You know what I mean? Like I could have been dead, you know, forget football at that point, right? Like that's life. And now, you know, it's different. You know, I think I enjoy football now. I enjoy the process of getting ready for a season a lot more now. Because this is all not promised, right? Like you can't take a minute of this for granted.
Right.
And that's something that I really learned in 2018. And I think it's only made me appreciate, you know, the opportunity, the game, Montreal, you know, even more, you know, moving forward.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that because your first chance at free agency, what do you end up doing is, again, being a Winnipeg guy, I completely understand the idea of wanting to play for the home team. And you sign a free agency contract with the Blue Bombers. But then... sometimes you can't go back home. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, you know what? I got a lot of respect for everything that the Bombers stand for. Coach O'Shea, Kyle, they treated me and my family with nothing but utmost class. You know, the players, the locker room, fantastic. But ultimately, you know, I think that was more of an emotional decision. And to be completely honest with you, the surgeon that I dealt with and the person that I've been looking after my blood clot situation, he was also the team surgeon for the Bombers. So there was that continuity and kind of comfortability where, hey, like, I don't know what this means in the long run for my health, but if something happens, I know that he's right here beside me. So that made that decision a little bit more, you know, about kind of life as a whole and where I was at than just football. If I had been thinking, you know, pure football sense about opportunity and the way the ratio stacks up and where Canadians are used and what my opportunity might be, you know, I probably would have gone back to Montreal, but just given the circumstances, you know, obviously Montreal 2018 wasn't that great either. You know, there was a lot of stuff that happened and, you know, it was a decision I made. Obviously the Bombers, you know, kudos to them. They won the Grey Cup, but you know, I was really, really excited to get back to Montreal halfway through last season and kind of get back to where I was and have another opportunity.
See, and to me, like, that's the tough part is because, yeah, you see the Bombers finally break that 30-year curse of winning the Grey Cup, and
yep.
You could have been a part of that, but like you said, there's always that something, like, that something deeper inside, I think, that, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, if you can say that you will eventually help bring Montreal a Grey Cup championship, I have to think that there's something just a little bit more satisfying about that, considering of the journey you've come to get to this point. I'm sure that there's that feeling as well.
Yeah, no, without question. I mean, look, to be part of the local guys here in Winnipeg that would have brought the cup back, yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, would have meant a whole lot to me, and definitely would have been, you know, a highlight of my career, you know, without question. But I think the reality is, right, is you want to have an opportunity to develop into the type of player that you think you can be. And for whatever reason, you know, that just wasn't going to happen, you know, here in Winnipeg. And obviously, I think they made a good decision because it worked for them. They won the Grey Cup. But for me personally, you know, this window is so short to play this game at this level. And like I said, you know, dealing with the blood clot the year before, this is all a cherry on top. And I want to make the most of it. And Montreal, to me, you know, was the organization and still is the organization that I think gives me, you know, the best opportunity to showcase what I can do and ultimately contribute to, again, like you said, hopefully bringing a great cup back to the 514.
How'd it make you feel, by the way, you know, you being in Winnipeg, you're here to Montreal, and then you get to take part, you get to take a part in a miracle on Mount Royal. How did that make you feel, you know, being on that sideline during that comeback versus your old team?
Yeah, that one was, that was nice. I'm not going to lie. You know, that was one of those where it's like, you know, maybe I am right. You know what I mean? And I made the right decision. And again, like I said, it's off the field. I got nothing but respect for everybody, yeah, you know, that wears a Bomber jersey. And you know, I'm extremely close with a lot of those guys and obviously live here year round. So, you know, for me, it was satisfying. It was nice that I was able to contribute, you know, and show that, hey, like, you know, maybe I'm not good enough for what you guys need, but, you know, I can play and here I am.
Yeah.
So there's that little bit of, you know, kind of that personal motivation that game. But at the end of the day, for us, it was the way we were able to come together as a team. I think that really kind of sparked what we had. You know, we did it in Calgary, do it again in Winnipeg. And that's where that belief factor really factored in. And like I said, our locker room's pretty young. So going through, you know, the Bombers, going through the Calgary, you know, two, you know, pillars of the CFL, with loaded talent, a lot of veteran guys, and being able to pull those off, I think that's what really got us excited. And, you know, we fell short last year, but that's why we're so excited to get back. You know, we know what we have. We've been there. We're battle tested in that sense, and we're just looking forward to get going.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of these young guys, let's get into it. The CFL draft was last Thursday. The Alouettes certainly,
yes, sir,
they stocked up on some, as far as I'm concerned, they've got some real talent on this team, which I'm very happy to see. I want to get your thoughts on who the Alouettes have drafted and how you think they're going to, how you think you can see them fitting into the organization.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple guys, obviously, that I'm more familiar with than others. I know DeQua, obviously, like a phenomenal talent. You know, he was just there, I think, in 2014. No, he might have been 14 or not. But, I mean, watching him play over the last couple of years in, you know, in the U Sports, like, you hear of him, obviously, on a continuum. Like, a bona fide player, game breaker. You know, he got an NFL shot for a reason. You know, tremendous athleticism. So, a guy that, if he does come north of the border this year, I mean, he'll fit right in, can probably contribute right away in multiple areas. And I'm definitely a guy I'm excited to get to know. You know, being out west, Carter O'Donnell there, phenomenal player. You know, I don't know if we'll see him soon. You wish him all the best down south. But again, just an absolute, you know, stud of an offensive lineman. You know, Canadian teams are built around quality Canadian offensive linemen, and he fits that bill. So, you know, whenever he does come up, if he does, I think, you know, Coach, or, you know, Danny did a great job in taking a flyer on him, you know, for the chance that he does come north. Brian, you know, he's a young kid, linebacker, that I'm excited to get to work with on a day-to-day. You know, I sent him a message right after the draft, you know, just saying kind of congrats and looking forward to working together. And, you know, he's just another piece of that Canadian puzzle for us, that, you know, at linebacker. You know, we're fortunate in the Canadian game to have you know, obviously Enoch and myself and everyone else under us, you know, playing that position. You know, there's not a lot of teams in the league that can say, hey, all of our linebackers are Canadian. You know what I mean? So that's something that we, you know, are proud of. And we think Brian adds, you know, phenomenal talent and a young, hungry kid, you know, that can help us out. Lawson from Queens. My brother actually goes to Queens. He played football there for 2 years, so I know quite a bit about him, just in terms of, you know, his character, his work ethic. My brother speaks very highly of him. So, you know, I know what we're getting in him, and he should be, you know, a force on the D-line for years to come. And for everyone else, you know, as we made our way through the draft, I think it's just smart decisions, like signing local guys, guys with a lot of upside, you know, running backs, receivers, you know, finding some, maybe some gems, you know, diamonds in the rough type guys that very much like myself might take a couple years to kind of show up. But when they're there, they'll be there to stay. And I think we got a great class. I think Danny did a great job, you know, and making sure that we're good for contributions now, and ultimately, you know, putting Montreal in a great spot for the not so distant future.
Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the name Brock Gowanlock, who was taken in the eighth round. Was it with the Manitoba guys in eighth round?
Yep. I don't know. Must be something in the water or something out here. I don't know.
I guess, but I mean, like, hey, listen, if he's half as, you know, hardworking and talented as you are, then I tell you what, Montreal got yet another steal, which I'm all for that. Don't get me wrong, but tell me a little bit about what you know about Brock.
Yeah, so we overlapped for a year at U of M there, and he's a guy that actually came in as D tackle. So he was 300 plus pounds, you know, still athletic, but definitely, you know, had too much weight on him. So to see his transition and go from a, call it an overweight, you know, D tackle to, you know, an athletic D end. I mean, that's pretty much all you have to say in terms of his work ethic. You know, he had 4 years, made the absolute most of it, trains, you know, his work ethic is second to none in the weight room, you know, on the field training for speed. He's a great kid. You know, I think he's a guy that's matured obviously a lot over his time, became a leader there. Someone that I know the coaching staff is really happy with, as he, you know, got older. But he's just a guy that's going to come in and work. You know, I think it was the morning after the draft, he texted me. He's like, hey, you know, I'm in Vancouver right now, but I'm going to be getting my butt back to Winnipeg. And I'd love if you can teach me some of the special, you know, special team drills that Montreal does and Mickey does, because I want to contribute wherever I can. And I mean, I think as a kid, as a draft pick, you know, that's all you can really ask of him, you know, is want to come in and, you know, make a mark wherever that opportunity may come. And, you know, the fact that he didn't celebrate for more than 10 hours and then he was texting me asking for drills, you know, that we did in practice last year, I think it kind of shows, you know, what kind of quality of a kid you're getting, how hard he's willing to work, and ultimately that he's putting the team first. You know, special teams isn't always the, you know, the glory of it all, but, you know, that he understands that's going to be how he gets on the team. I mean, I hope it goes well for him, and I'll be able to help him out, you know, once he gets to Montreal and gets to camp.
No, it's a great point. Like, the special teams is definitely not the sexiest position on the football team, but I mean, that's where a lot of these rookies are going to, that's where you make your, that's where you make your bread, essentially, is to get out there and get yourself noticed, really. And yeah, if he's willing to come in with that work ethic, that's fantastic. Like, that's the stuff you, as an Alouettes fan, that's what you want to hear, is someone that's ready to roll up their sleeves and get to work right away. Like, I love hearing stuff like that.
And look at how, look at also too, how, as you know, we're talking about that, having to put in their dues. I'll give a good example for fans out there. Look at what Christian Matt started off at, on the Alouettes roster, and look where he is now. I mean, I remember seeing him, and you know, just a guy on the practice roster doing, you know, doing what he could to stay in shape and with practicing, and then look where he is now. I mean, so it's it seems that, I'm not saying it that, you know, you're always going to make and always become the guy or one of the guys, but you have to start somewhere in order to, it's not always given to somebody. A lot of people may think it may be, but it's, if you're a player, you really have to be a team player. And that's cool.
No, you know what? You say that now, and you know, everyone thinks, oh, you're a first round pick, you're going to come in and start right away. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. You know, I remember being a high school student in Winnipeg when Enoch Mwamba was drafted first overall here by the Bombers back in 2011. You know, I remember that. You know, he's a linebacker. Typically, linebackers don't get picked. He's a guy that obviously I had heard of, and you know, you kind of want to be like, and obviously now we're playing side by side and we're good friends. So, you know, funny how things work out, but he's a guy, number one overall, ended up playing in the NFL. He still had to go on special teams for 2 years with Winnipeg before he really got a shot at linebacker. So that's a first overall draft pick with the athletic ability to play in the NFL. And he still had to make his mark on, you know, special teams. So everyone that gets drafted, unless you're an old lineman, I mean, if you're not thinking special teams from the jump, I mean, you're probably lost already. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you need to do. And whether that's what you do in the season, once the season rolls around, you're going to have to do the drills in training camp anyway. So you might as well get your mindset right and your body right to be able to contribute and just show the guys around you that, hey, like, I will do anything. You know what I mean? And I think the guys that are willing to do that and put that work in, you know, that's the guys that are going to be here 3, 4, 5 years from now, and you're still going to be talking about them.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good question, and it's something we at least should mention. How, obviously, with the talk of the possibility of a shortened season we're actually coming up on originally in 8 days, it was supposed to be the start of rookie and then training camp. To you, how important, and this may be not just for you specifically, but talking to these new guys coming in, how important is it that you come to training camp and you have your mind in the right place?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that's the biggest battle right now for a lot of us, you know, across the league, is, you know, just being able to kind of stay in a good headspace and stay motivated to work on your craft. Because again, there are so many unknowns. You know, I think the biggest thing is just control what you can. Yeah. You know, all of us are in the same boat. You know, we don't know when the start date's going to be. But you know, you better do your job as a professional athlete and as a, you know, a teammate that's being held accountable. You better be ready, you know, whatever ready means for you, for whenever that, you know, bell sounds and we're ready to get back at it. You know, just be ready. And a lot of these kids, you know, you got to be smart about it. You don't want to overdo yourself and burn yourself out, because ultimately, you know, whether it's an 8-game season or an 18-game season, to be honest, by the time week 6, 7 gets there, it's all a blur anyway. And you better just make sure that you're right, both mentally, physically, and ready to contribute. Because, I mean, like I said, we got some unfinished business. You know, we're hungry to get back at it here in Montreal. And I think these kids can add a spark in camp, and they'll be young, they'll be hungry, it'll be their first time. And, you know, we can probably, as some veteran guys, feed off that too. So just camaraderie, get ready, get your mind right, get your body right, and let's go and see what they're all about.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now, again, let's say we do get a season, whether, as you said, whether it's 18 games or 8 games, you still got to be ready for it. But you yourself, DJ, obviously Grey Cup is the number one goal. There's no question about that. But you personally, for the Montreal Alouettes in 2020, what are your goals for this season?
Yeah, great question. You know, personally, I mean, obviously, you know, stepping up in a leadership role, you know, being able to be out there every down on defense, still, you know, helping out special teams wherever need be, if I need to go back in and snap, you know, for whatever reasons. I mean, just being able to do whatever I can to help the team win. That's my personal goal, is staying on the field and being held accountable and being able to make plays for the team, you know, defense, special teams, whatever that looks like. And then ultimately, you know, I echo your remarks. You know, I want to win a Grey Cup. You know, being part of a Bomber team that ended up winning it, you know, I saw it. I was here in Winnipeg when they had their, you know, parade, and I had to shut off my social media for a day because I couldn't stand watching it anymore. And, you know, it makes you more hungry. And to see where we left off last year, you know, seeing the type of people we brought in, you know, new faces and the guys we brought back. I mean, there's nothing but, you know, positive vibes in that locker room. There's nothing but positivity around the team. Like you said, new ownership, new management, you know, Kahari, I got nothing but, you know, he's one of the best people I've ever been around in this game, you know, regardless of his title. And we're just ready to go, you know, and we hope that we can bring Montreal a Grey Cup. And that's our ultimate goal. You know, if we fall short, we fall short. But that's what we're aiming for, you know, no less than that.
I couldn't put it any better myself. I mean, that is the ultimate goal, but to want to do better for yourself. And I love that you've been motivated by the Bombers Grey Cup win, because like that's the kind of thing you need sometimes, just to light that fire under you to push you that extra little bit when you start wavering. Like that's perfect. I love hearing that, because yeah, it gets me fired up too, because I think about too what the Alouettes did and how far they've come, but we still haven't reached that ultimate goal. And if that doesn't get you excited, folks, I don't know what will.
The thing that I remember most is I remember that feeling, you know, being on the field at the end of the game there against Calgary when we clinched the playoff berth last year. I remember the techno music going, the phones were out, the lights were going nuts. I'm like, you know, that's how you want to play. That's the type of atmosphere you want to play in. And it's our job as athletes and as a team, you know, to give the fans something to get excited for. And you know, we hope we can do that 9 times, you know, if we have an 18-game season. And if it's shortened, every time we get, you know, in Percival, I mean, we want to get that place rocking. We think we got the players to do it. We got the staff to do it. And now let's get after this together. And, you know, it's the whole city, right? It's not just us as a football team. The fans mean something. You know, everybody has a piece of it. So let's take this thing and let's, you know, go as far as we can with it.
Now, I wouldn't be, you know, we've been talking about this whole time during this weird year that we've currently been having, and we're talking about the CFL family and stuff like that, DJ. What we want to know from you, what have you been doing to keep yourself sane during this weird time that we're calling 2020?
Yeah, no, good question. So I work full-time for a Canadian supplement company called Body Logix. They're based in Winnipeg. I'm actually their athlete relations manager, so I deal with all the sponsored athletes. You know, we have a few of the Owls on there as well, all the team partnerships and whatnot. So that's my day job. I also have a personal training business that I run here. So, you know, helping out high school kids, you know, junior football players, college football players, you know, with their off-season training. You know, those are the two biggest items. And then outside of that, you know, I think you can find a silver lining in anything. And to be honest, just being able to kind of take a step back and spend some quality time with family and, you know, maybe work on some things that typically, you know, you don't have time for, you know, or kind of things that are, you know, of interest to you, but again, you just can't get around to them. You know, those are the things that, again, keep me interested. You know, I like to try new things. I like to learn. You know, I feel like I'm a student still, you know, so taught myself how to code and make a website, you know, last month, and you know, this month, I'm sure it'll be something different, but, you know, just try to get creative. You know, you have more time than you typically would and use that to your advantage. You know, don't just sit and get stale, just constantly improve, whether it's football and, you know, Enoch and I meet twice a week, we go over film, you know, we talk about our playbook, we make sure we're on the same page. And, you know, those are all items that typically we probably wouldn't have time for just given schedules and whatnot. But, you know, now it's, hey, take advantage of the time that you have and make sure you're ready for whenever normalcy returns.
Yeah, I agree. Cliffy, take us home.
That couldn't put it much better myself. So DJ, I tell you, man, I'm excited. I really want this to happen. I really want there to be a football season. I want you to go out there and kill it like I know you're going to do. And as you said, you're chomping at the bit to get back to Montreal. All the players are as well. Just to hear that, you know, you guys are still in communication and everything like that, it does me good to hear that, because it sounds that whenever this gets started, whether it's, you know, July or September, as we're talking about, I mean, whenever they get the season underway, it sounds like you guys will at least be ready to go and you'll make the most of it no matter what. So I love hearing that. I guess basically just to sum things up, just tell us, as far as being Alouette goes, what's the one thing you want people to take away from your tenure so far here in Montreal and what we can expect in the future?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing is I wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm relentless. I'll do whatever it takes for the team. You know, last year, shoot, there's a couple of games I was starting at linebacker, starting at long snapper, still playing kickoff, still playing punt return. Like, it does not matter. You know, whenever your number's called, you know, for me anyway, you know, I'm ready. You know, whatever role that may be. And I'm a team guy. You know, I hope I lead by example. You know, I hope I'm personable and I'm approachable off the field. Because like I said, we're in this together. You know, it's much bigger than that. And just seeing all the positivity around the team last year and being able to be a part of that and live there and just see the excitement and have fans still reaching out. And I mean, crap, we're in May now. You know, the season's 6 months ago. And still having fans kind of reach out and be excited and ask for autographs here and there. I mean, that's what you want, and that's what this game's all about. You know, and the city's given so much to me in my career, and I can't wait to give back. And let's just get this thing going. I'm excited. You know, we're ready. That's it. We're ready.
All right. Fantastic, my man. That's it. I mean, wow. All right, that's it. Well, DJ, thank you again for joining us. Actually, really quick, anything you want to plug on social media?
No, you guys just hit me up. Yeah, you guys can actually check out my website, djlalama.com, get in contact with me there. You know, answer any questions. You know, I love reaching out and talking with the fans. So anything you guys need from me, feel free to reach out. I'm a pretty friendly guy, and I'll get back to you.
All right. There you go, folks. That's DJ LaLama right there. DJ, thanks again so much for joining us here on the Alouettes Flight Deck. We definitely appreciate it. And hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be having some good news and hopefully talking about you getting your butt back on the football field.
Hey, I hope so too, man. We're all in the same boat. I can't wait for that day.
Why don't we thank DJ for joining us. Some great insight, not only on the draft, but what it's like to be a draft pick. And I'm hoping if any of the any future CFL prospects and draft picks or current ones may be listening to the show, I hope they take what he said seriously, because you know, the guys had the highest of highs and he's had the lowest of lows, and he's still going strong
without question. Like he's definitely the proof positive that regardless of where you're drafted, whether you're the first round or, again, that dreaded Mr. Irrelevant position, the last pick taken in the draft, it doesn't matter. Yeah. At the end of the day, get on a roster. And when your number is called, be ready. And you got to outwork everybody. And that's what DJ's done. Like, he has come in and he has busted his butt to become one of the premier linebackers in this league. And, again, one of these guys that is just getting better with time. And that's what I love, is the fact that he's still so young. He still has his best football way ahead of him. And just you hear how he talks about being a part of this team, being part of this nucleus here in Montreal. Like, he sees that there's something special here and he wants to be a part of it. He wants to help bring Montreal a Grey Cup championship. And I think to him, that's going to be his greatest accomplishment, is what that day comes when he's able to bring that Grey Cup here to Montreal and celebrate it with Alouettes fans. I mean, my God, how do you not get excited about that? How do you not feel good about having a player like that on your team? So, DJ, once again, we can't thank you enough for joining us, sharing your insight for this year's draft. And again, you're always welcome back here anytime you want. It's there for the taking.
Exactly. And before we talk about the last thing that we talked about, it is, yeah, I guess kind of it is breaking news and stuff like that. I still want to remind everybody that if they wanted to check out all of our all the history of the Alouettes Flight Deck, they can go over to our archive, or any place that does have you know, all different aggregates for podcasts. But the main ones that you can head to are at alouettesflightdeck.ca, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and Spotify. So the news came out and it's actually up now. We've actually retweeted it, the whole statement, I guess I could say, from Randy Ambrose. He was before one of the government committees today, basically pleading the case for the CFL getting some of their funding. And as we mentioned to it two episodes ago, about what the league feels that they need in order to, I want to say survive, Cliff. To me, it's like putting survive in quotation marks, because I think the league will survive, but it's what type of shape will it be in? But anyways, so one of the main things that came out of Ambrosi's mouth is that best case scenario, truncated season. But he actually said the most likely scenario, and I'm probably paraphrasing, is that there won't be a season at all in 2020. That's pretty big.
It's huge. I mean, it's definitely not the news CFL fans want to hear, because again, no football it's tough. I mean, at the same time too, you wonder, even if they were able to put together a season, realistically, it's definitely not going to start on time. That's been made painfully clear, because training camp was supposed to be less than 2 weeks away. Yep. And now everything's just been
actually, literally, from we are 8 days.
Yeah.
From when we're taking it, 8 days.
Yeah. Like, again, like that's the beautiful thing about the CFL draft, is it helps set the table as far as getting excited for training camp to start and leading into the season getting underway. This year, yeah, we had the draft and it's great to know that we got some players, but now it's like, are we even going to see these guys on the field anytime soon? And right now the answer is no, we're not. And will we get to see them at all at any point this year? And that too is still uncertain. Like, yeah. there's so much uncertainty, but now reality has come in and just basically slap everybody right in the face and saying, you know what, there is a very good chance that this CFL season is not going to happen. And the fact that now the CFL also too is going to the government, Canadian government, basically with hat in hand, looking for help to stay afloat, essentially. And the hard part is because there's a lot of people who look at the CFL as entertainment, and as they should, but not, it's not an essential service. It's not something that you need. Like, you can live without football. It would suck, but you can live without football. The idea of the Canadian government handing over any money to the Canadian Football League to help keep it afloat is preposterous to a lot of people, because how can you hand over money to this, you know, this sports league, and not to, you know, charities, or not to organizations to help feed homeless people, or kids that aren't getting school lunches because schools are closed, and so on and so forth. Like, there's any number of different ways that money could be spent. And the idea of handing it over to a professional football league sounds gluttonous, to be quite honest, at least in their eyes.
Let me ask you this. For you, what do you think the difference is between what they've done in the U.S. compared to what the CFL is asking for? Because based on the stimulus packages in the U.S., some larger companies and corporations, not necessarily just sports leagues, are getting some of this money. For us, I think the main one of the differences for us is that it's heritage. It's part of the lexicon of Canada.
You're absolutely right. Like, this is whether you like the CFL or not, and if you don't like the CFL, that's fine. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I know lots of people prefer the NFL. You and I are NFL fans. We're also CFL fans. Like, we appreciate football at every level. Not every Canadian does. Like, for some reason, there's any number of reasons, really. There's a lot of Canadian-born people that just do not like the CFL or care about the CFL. And that's fine. Like, I can understand why they wouldn't necessarily want their tax dollars spent on trying to keep this league afloat. If they can't keep themselves afloat, then why should the Canadian government prop them up? And I get that reasoning. I can understand that sentiment. But as you said, like, the Canadian Football League, for a lot of people, is woven into the fabric of our country.
Yeah.
It is a part of our lives. It is something that we thrive upon. It's kind of how we identify as Canadians, is for our love of the Canadian Football League. And it's so hard right now. It's, you know, I really don't know which way to look at this, to be honest with you. I mean, yes, I obviously want a football season of some sort. Like, and I'll take 8 games if that's all we're going to get. I mean, something's better than nothing. But, I mean, realistically, there's just so many variables in play right now. And I just don't know if everything can kind of go off without a hitch as far as getting an actual honest-to-goodness football season underway. I just, especially with each passing day, it just seems less and less likely that this is going to happen. And it's a very bitter pill to swallow, to put it frankly, is, and not just for you and I, but I think for the vast majority of football fans throughout this country, is the idea of no CFL at all it's hard to imagine. And it's something you don't even want to think about. But sadly, especially after today, like, this is something that you have no choice but to consider, is that there is a very, very good chance that there is no CFL football played in 2020.
Yeah, it is very possible. And you know, there have been some interesting stories in the paper recently. You know, we had from one from our owner, and that was done by Herb Zerkowski in the Gazette. I think we have come to learn already that, you know, as much as we want to see it on TV, you know, the, you know, broadcasters and sponsors would still be able to be shown on television, that this league, like many other minor leagues and indoor football in the U.S., it is gate driven, unfortunately. And I, as much as I would love to see games with no fans in the stands, I don't think it's going to happen, because I think there would be too much of a, I think more money, in my opinion, would be lost than that. But it's, I don't know what else to say. I'm same thinking as you, is that I think it's going to be decided very shortly, probably by June 1st, in my opinion, that that'll be the go or no go date.
Mm-hmm. And just the idea that, you know, the Grey Cup, which is supposed to be played in Regina this November, may not be contested at all, is, it's a tough one to swallow, because you think about, that's the culmination of the year for Canadian football fans. Like, that's the ultimate party, the ultimate send-off to help celebrate not just, you know, this league and its teams, but also all of Canada, essentially. And the idea that this game may not be played is, it's heartbreaking, to tell you the truth. You know, but yeah. I mean, this is unfortunately the reality we're forced to live in. Is, I mean, will we get football at all this year? I mean, the NFL is, they're releasing their schedule. They're going forward, fully expecting to play football in some way, shape, or form. But I, as far as the Canadian Football League goes, it's so up in the air. But right now, it's like, now things are starting to take a bit of a negative turn, and it's not a good feeling at all. I just wish there was something positive. I wish there was some sort of benchmark or some sort of statement that says, okay, if you can reach this level here, then we'll have football.
Well,
but there isn't.
I think the problem is, though, is that where we, and people, you know, who know the current situation in Canada know this. I mean, with Quebec being the epicenter of this horrible virus, nothing's going to be opening up here soon, anytime soon. And on top of that, with us being next to the epicenter of the United States in New York State, there's no way. And the with the borders being closed, no way. There's no way, unfortunately. And I think I'm just hoping that the league will be able to, if we don't play, there will be help in some sort of fashion, and that this league will come back stronger, and we'll be able to join each other, whether it be with a vaccine and masks, who knows? But 2020 is that weird year.
Yeah, I mean, man, this is like, these are some crazy times that we're living in, folks. And I mean, we're doing the best we can. I mean, I know we are, but it doesn't make it any easier. That's for sure. Like, today's news definitely hits like a rock just dropped in the ocean. It just sinks you.
Yeah. Too bad we can't finish the show on a more cheery note. But unfortunately, that's what it is. I mean, it's something we're gonna have to live with. But we can tell you here. How about this? We can tell you we will have content. We will have content. Season or not, we will have content here at the Alouettes Flight Deck. That we can guarantee.
100%. I mean, we've got so many ideas that we've been talking about back and forth. And as you can see, like, we've got we've had some pretty great guests over the past couple of weeks even. And it's all just, again, we want to entertain. We want to inform people. We want people to get excited about the Alouettes. And it's not stopping anytime soon. Like, we may not get a season, we may not get things started the way we want it to, but we still want to be able to provide for everybody. And who knows, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll still have football in some way, shape, or form. And if that's the case, we'll be just as excited.
Yeah.
But until then, I know I feel comfortable speaking for Tim and saying that we are going to do everything we can to keep providing excellent content for you, the listeners, because quite frankly, you deserve it. You need to know what's going on with this team, even if there is no football being played right now. And we're sitting around waiting and hoping and praying that something's going to happen positively. And until then, until we do get that good news of some sort, we're still going to be here. We're not going anywhere. I want us to be that beacon of light, if you will, for Alouettes fans. We want you to come here and enjoy us talking with everybody, and you being a part of the show as well. Like, that's, to me, like, that's what makes this so entertaining and so enjoyable. So don't go anywhere, folks, because we're not.
Yeah, exactly. So from Cliff and myself, we want you to stay healthy, and please do what is necessary to stay that way. Stay tuned to social media at Alouettes FL Deck for more information on upcoming shows. And maybe a couple other things. You never know. But for everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. One final approach. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white
north. Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.